From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last November, almost a year ago now, when about 100 people gathered at the Port of Rochester in Shalott to discuss their ideas for how to make the port and the surrounding areas a year-round destination. The Shalott Charrette, as it was called, explored ideas for transportation, activities, underutilized spaces, the marina, the park, and more. And the goal of that charrette was to key in on how to make the area a year-round destination accessible for everyone. Think ice skating rinks, maybe winterized pavilions, heated gazebos. There are a lot of ideas tossed around. Well, last week, the city of Rochester issued a new RFP, a new request for proposals for developing a parcel of land near the port. The 2.8-acre site is the same piece of land that was part of a previous controversial plan to build a hotel and condominiums. That plan faced a major pushback from some residents, and it fell through because the developer, Edgewater Resources, missed a deadline to provide the city with a detailed financial plan. So now the city is basically starting over there, and local residents hope that their ideas from the charrette and other community meetings will be considered. Is the city listening? This hour, we'll explore what it might take to make the Port of Rochester a year-round destination. I'd like to welcome our guest for the hour. The man who said the most underutilized asset in the city is right there on the site is David Riley, a planner and research associate at the Center for Governmental Research. Did I quote you correctly? Didn't you recently say that?
I think I said one of.
Not the...
But it's up there, yeah.
It's up there, okay. It's not fake news. Thank you, David. It's good to have you back here. Molly Clifford is a member of Rochester City Council. Always nice to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And Maria Frigiuelli is Executive Director of the Community Design Center of Rochester. Maria, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
A brief hello from Megan Mack, producer of Connections, on day two of our fall membership campaign. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. I know that you're eager to hear from our guests and also listeners in our community who have strong ideas about what they'd like to see at the Port of Rochester. And maybe you have strong ideas about what you'd like to see on your local public radio station. So we are here because of you. When we say this is member-supported public radio, it's only possible because of listeners like you who call us at 454-6300 and pledge your support to keep programming like this on the air. You're hearing from experts in our community design world and a member of City Council. Where else can you have them all in the same room for an hour on local media discussing issues that matter to you? And where else can you call a program and share your opinions? This is it. This program is it. We work hard every day to try to keep these opportunities and open conversations available to you. We want to keep doing that. Help us out by calling 454-6300 or going online to WXXINews.org and hitting that donate button.
And you were at the Shalott, Megan Mack. You're a Shalottier.
I was at the Charrette. Yes, I was. I am a Shalottian.
Shalottian. I believe that's the term.
It is a gem. The Port of Rochester. David's right.
Okay. Well, thank you, Megan Mack. And again, 454-6300. The rest of the hour, if you hear us say a number, it'll be the number to call the program because a lot of our listeners have opinions. In fact, I see the phone ringing already. The Shalottians are lining up to weigh in on this. So what I want to do is at least kind of pull back for just a second and remind you of what we're talking about and where. Molly Clifford kind of set the scene for us. For some of our listeners who don't go to Shalott as often, or for some of the listeners, say you're from Pittsford and you think Shalott's on the other side of the moon, which it is not.
Definitely not.
They may know something like Mr. Dominic. So set the scene visually. If we're standing in the road, Mr. Dominic's is on our left.
Correct.
The parcel of land we're talking about is on the right?
It is. It is indeed. It runs from Lake Avenue basically to North River Street, which runs along the beautiful new marina now, and between Corrigan Street and Portside Drive. So it is that sort of... temporary parking lot that's been a parking lot, I think, there for the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years.
It's a beautiful parking
lot. It is a great
site. Oh, some of those parking spaces could hold cars. They could hold trucks.
It's a little bumpy.
It's amazing. All right. So that's what we're talking about. And this RFP, is it fair to call this sort of a starting over, Molly?
I do think it's fair to say it's a starting over. I don't think anybody has to be reminded of the last time around. That was pretty contentious. But I will say that the community has really come together in the wake of that experience. And it has been a very positive experience over the last year as people really, you know, put their differences aside and really talked about what they would like to see in their community, whether they are Charlotte residents or whether they live in other places, and just appreciate all that Charlotte has to offer.
Well, we did reach out not just to a member of City Council, Molly Clifford, who's here, but also the Warren administration, and they did not respond to multiple invitations to join us on this program today. But so here we are. And as we go throughout the hour, if you've got thoughts or ideas that you want to share about what you'd like to see in terms of development, there are some parallels, I think, to Parcel 5, to what's happening at the port. There are debates about how much development is a good idea. Do we want high rises? Do we want green space? It's 454-6300. That's the pledge line. If you want to do that, that's fine too. They'll take your calls there. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Email us, connections@WXXI.org. Maria, when you have an event like the Charette, you have about 100 people come out on a marginal weather day in November. You've got a lot of interest to get this right down there. But this only matters if people are listening, and it's not just sort of lip service. You put together a report. Do they say, oh, well, thanks for this, and we'll listen to it, with air quotes? Are they really listening? Do you get the sense that the city and that whatever comes in terms of development will at least be impacted by what happened at the Charette?
Yes, I think so. The experience of drawing all the people together through a long and in-depth engaged process with the work that we did with the steering committee in preparation for the Charette was really helpful in bringing all the people to the table. And then the public event was very well attended. It was our best attended Charette. And we have been able to work together as a link between the city and the community in sharing information and trying to make sure that everybody understands what the goals are. And the goals are really to get, first of all, the community working together, but also to educate the community about good development strategies, and to also to help to communicate some of the goals that the city had. So I think we've made a great step forward.
David, this is where a development, whether it is a Parcel 5, whether it is another city parcel, whether it's waterfront development, you will never have everybody agreeing. There will always be someone who says, how dare you build that there? Or how dare you put this green space there when you could develop it? So you know that going in. What's the best kind of process that you can envision to make sure what is decided is going to be the best to serve, I guess, the most? How do we come to that conclusion knowing that there will always be someone who's unhappy?
I think the process that the neighborhood and the city have tried to follow with the Charette on the front end of this new RFP is pretty ideal. I think there's a 20-year history to trying to develop this site, and I think the city would point out that it's done an awful lot of public outreach over the years. But I think, nonetheless, by the time the last project came around, a lot of people felt in the neighborhood that it didn't reflect what they wanted or that they didn't feel consulted in spite of those previous years of effort, because I think a lot of it felt like ancient history. So I think putting the input process at the front end rather than at the back end and putting out a proposal and asking people to respond to it, helping the community kind of coalesce around what they actually want to see on the front end instead of reacting to a proposal is great, as often as you can do that.
Yeah, and so let me just grab an early phone call to sort of give an example of the wide range of ideas that are out there. Jim in Irondequoit wants to see what? What do you want to see there, Jim?
An aquarium.
An aquarium. So tell us about it.
An aquarium. If I didn't call in today, my brother would kill me, because I've been chirping in his ear for years that's the idea that, like, of all the ideas I've got, to me that's my best one, and he gets mad at me. So anyway, when I heard you guys talking about this, I had to call in. Yeah, an aquarium, a really large, beautiful aquarium that gives you something that's the focal point, that kids are magnets for nature, and it's an educational focal point. It checks every box, and I can't imagine how anyone could be against it.
How big are we talking here?
Well, big enough to showcase everything in the lake and the surrounding, everything that's surrounding it, you know, this whole natural area, and a reflection of the natural habitat. So, I mean, obviously the lake is the focal point in the aquarium, but I think it's also just, it's an educational tool. So something like an extension of the museum, I mean, of the zoo.
And again, another city where this exists that you would point to say, do that, or is there sort of an analog somewhere?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well,
I just know. I tell you what. Here's my what I think is the standard. Why I think it would work. If you go to Bass Pro Shops out in Auburn, there's constantly kids going up to that aquarium that they have out there, and it's not even a big one, it's just a small one. But I can imagine what maybe 4 to 5 times the size of that. Now you've got kids absolutely enthralled by everything that they can look at up close. And I think that ultimately becomes the focal point, the attraction. Oh, it's just an idea.
Okay. I appreciate that, Jimmy. First out of the gate. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. That's Jim in Irondequoit. And, so Molly Clifford, there's one example. I'm sure somebody at the Shred a year ago raised a similar idea.
Yes.
And so why don't we'll take Jim's idea specifically, and then we'll sort of broaden it out there. So aquarium. Are we going to see an aquarium there?
I don't think any time in the very near future, but you're right. It is an idea that gets brought up a lot, and I love the idea. That would be fantastic. We obviously would have to have a partner, and whether it's the county via the zoo or the museum or a local university, we need to have some partnerships there in order for that to happen. It's a tremendous expense, but it's not something that can't be done. It's just probably not going to be the first thing that gets done.
Okay, Maria?
Interestingly enough, Kim White, when she was here speaking about the redevelopment in Chattanooga, Tennessee, they originally started the whole process with a community design charrette, and a student threw out the idea of an aquarium, which has become one of their most successful signature projects. So the idea might seem a little bit far-fetched, but there is some basis. At the Shred, it was identified that the Sherlock community wanted to identify itself as a marine community, so mm-hmm. this would be part of that branding. And there is opportunity for research and education to also be a component. The nearest aquarium, I believe, there's Boston, Toronto, and Chicago. So there's certainly, geographically, seems like it could fill a need.
I think the city wants to get RFP in by, January?
End of January, yes.
By the end of January. And then, Molly, what's the process likely to be? How fast after that do you think?
So that's a good question. I mean, there is an RFP committee made up of city staff. I don't know that if they plan on bringing in others, but to review the proposals and then make recommendations. I would imagine for them to do due diligence, that'll take at least a couple of months before they put a proposal out there for the community to comment on.
If we're sitting here 1 year from today, should we have a really good, sort of ball rolling down the road on what's happening there?
I would hope so, yes.
Okay. And so, David Riley, if the idea is that this really is one of the underutilized parts of our city. When you say underutilized, I don't know if you are, do you have a specific vision in your own mind, or are you thinking as someone who's now working in the sphere that you're in, it's not up to you, it's up to the community, but something has to happen there?
Yeah, more the latter. I don't have a sort of specific plan in my head. It's just, to me, as somebody who moved to the Rochester area about 5 years ago, and went up there when I first interviewed for a job here with my future boss, and I brought friends from out of town up there. It's just an amazing place. It's beautiful. I moved here from the Boston area, and I often tell people it seems like the ocean, but it doesn't smell right. But it's a beautiful natural setting, and it's got this tremendous history. And it's just strange to me to talk to local people who are like, oh, yeah, I've never really been up there. Or,
I mean, it takes an hour and a half to get there.
We're getting into Rochester's concept of time.
Exactly. The weird thing is, in Rochester, it's 20 minutes to get anywhere except the Port of Rochester, which is like an hour and a half. It's not true, but part of this is this concept of the expectation, reputation, and access. And that came up in the charrette. So what do you recall, not only from the charrette, but from the ideas that might either change the reputation or the actual access of it?
Yeah, and I also worked on my master's thesis was related to Charlotte as well. So I've spent a lot of time up there. My group at the charrette spent a lot of time talking about how to get people around in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. That in spite of the fact that there's a huge amount of parking up there, people still sometimes perceive it as difficult to get to or difficult to find where you're going or if you park in the sea of parking, where do I go from here? So we spent a lot of time talking about trying to figure out sites for satellite parking, ways to get people into that area with shuttles or with some sort of, trolley bus or something
say
like
it,
that.
Say it, say streetcar, say it.
Yeah,
or gotta streetcar. Say streetcar.
There you go.
Okay.
Gotta check the light rail urbanist box there, I guess.
yes.
So I think that is certainly a big part of it.
How realistic, Molly, Maria, is it that we're going to see at least, is transportation part of the challenge there?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think for residents, it's a challenge in that there is essentially one way in and out of Charlotte. That's not exactly true, but, you know, Lake Avenue is certainly a major corridor. And so a lot of discussion about how do we get people around without it causing issues for the people who live there. So, yeah, that was a major focus of the Charette.
Yeah, and speaking about underutilized resources or assets, it's the CSX tracks currently pose a huge barrier for many people in the community to be able to traverse the tracks and to create opportunities for development. And I know it's a big lift, but the tracks exist. So is there a possibility in your dreamscaping down the road that we could have a light rail system that would take people through the community on those tracks and all of a sudden turn that into an amazing resource and asset?
Well, I'm sort of a booster for Rochester. I mean, I'm a journalist, but I have no problem saying that there are some stories you want to succeed. Everybody wants to see whatever is developed there work. And just building on David's point, I was there 2 summers ago with a 4-year-old who literally thought it was the ocean. You know, just the look at that beach and the picture you take. And my brother lives near the ocean in Florida, and I sent him pictures. And he said, "Where did you guys go this weekend?" I said, "I don't know, 3 miles from my house." It's amazing. It's really an amazing place, and yet most people have not been there. I think I've been from the east side suburbs to that beach in 18 minutes before. You got to make some lights, but you can do it. And so there are a lot of sort of reputational things that are not deserved. But I want to continue to hear from the community. So let me reappeal to you, no matter where you are. First of all, if you're in Charlotte, I want to hear from you this hour. Second of all, if you haven't been there, or if you think that, well, I would go there if they had X, email the program connections at WXXI.org, or it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I have 4 emails about aquariums that just came in. So aquariums high on the list. What else stands up? In a moment, I'm going to kind of go back to some of what the city has said. But let me ask our guests who are all at this charrette, which is charrette's sort of a fancy word for a big community planning day. And that happened last November, so almost a year ago. What stood out to you as ideas that were really interesting, but not, you know, sort of off the map, not impossible? Maria?
Well, there certainly are some great ideas regarding the branding. The community wants to brand itself as a marine community, but if people come there by boat, there's no place to stay. There's no place to shop, as far as getting resources that they might need, groceries, et cetera. So to really provide those services that would help it become a really first-rate marine community would be essential. One of the biggest problems that I think the disconnect that exists is that the community really is looking for kind of a low-rise, small-scale development, and the city really sees the expense and the investment that they need to make really requires a high or dense development. So that's one of the issues that we're going to have to deal with, finding a happy medium.
Okay. Councilmember Clifford.
One of the ideas that was raised that we also hear a fair amount about was a ice skating rink, which I also think is a fantastic idea and something that Buffalo has done pretty successfully, again, to bring people down there in the wintertime.
Outdoor.
When it's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Outdoor. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That could be, you know, a mini skate park or something like that in the summertime, or used for another purpose in the summertime. So that's one that to me seems like relatively easy, relatively straightforward, that would really be a nice quality of life improvement.
Okay, David Riley.
I thought people had a lot of exciting ideas about things you could do without building anything, that there is this sort of perception that there's not a lot going on in Charlotte and that, you know, from like now until April, it's like wasteland tundra and why would you ever want to go there? People, I thought, had some interesting ideas about trying to kind of embrace wintertime up there, having more, there is a winter celebration up there, but it's, you know, one weekend all winter long. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of potential, as Molly mentioned, for ice skating, but for winter celebrations, for bonfires, for community gatherings in the winter. I think the area itself is not just an underutilized asset, but there are facilities there that are underused. The terminal building is a tremendous space with not a whole lot going on in it. The Robach Center, I think, is a beautiful space.
Oh, it sure is.
That could be used quite a bit more. So people talked a lot about how do we get more life into what we already have, which I think is something that would, with some programming and effort, not require a lot of investment.
Yeah, and it really is a walkable area once you get there. It's very walkable. And Just a lot of great, gorgeous sight lines. I'm going to get to your phone calls in a second. Patrick and Shalott called in to remind everyone that the plan the Charette Group developed is online and available to the public now. Where is that?
You can find it at charlottecca.org. That's the Community Association's website. So they have the Charette as well as the vision plan.
All right. And some of the feedback, we're going to get to the phone calls. Jack, we'll come to you in just a second. But on the subject of the aquariums, we'll close the loop on aquariums. But boy, when I mentioned, you know, so where are some other aquariums? I've got three separate emails about an aquarium in Burlington, Vermont, along Lake Champlain. So this is Corey. Lori and others said an example of an aquarium that would go well with what is being done in Shalott is what was being done in Burlington, Vermont, along Lake Champlain. And CT says the Toronto Aquarium is great, even better than the Baltimore Aquarium, which gets a lot of love. So a lot of commentary on aquariums. Who knows? A lot of interest in that. Jack in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, you talked about transportation. The bridge that opens and closes in the spring and fall at the north end of 590 has been a subject for a while. And I believe it was Senator Schumer that said that he would look into the possibility of making that bridge more usable in the summertime. And if they did that, you could quickly go up 590, head west and skip over the next big bridge to Charlotte, and that might solve a lot of the problems.
Okay, some thoughts there. Councilmember Clifford, any thought there? And
well, that actually raises my really crazy policy wonky idea, which is one of the things that I think we could all benefit from in this community is if the town of Irondequoit, the city of Rochester, and the town of Greece worked more closely together on our waterfront as a whole. You know, the beauty of Lake Ontario and its local beaches does not stop at Charlotte. And I think that we could really, if we had some comprehensive planning and people really work together and put their heads together, I think we could have an awesome waterfront all the way along. And I think the gentleman's plan would fit right in there.
Thanks for the phone call there. Jack from Rochester. We'll get Melissa in a second. Richard says, Evan, how can there be an outdoor skating rink in Shalott as man-made global warming is overheating the globe? Snarky, Richard, but here's the thing. I'm glad you asked, because eventually warming might make Rochester too warm to have snow. Not anytime soon, though. And in fact, what we see is, number one, more moisture in the atmosphere, which means when it does rain and when it does snow, we get heavier totals. So we'll have probably snowier winters when the snow does come, but snow more in bursts. Remember the last winter where we didn't snow for 20 days and then you'd get 12 to 14 inches in a day? That's not every event is connected to climate change, but that's more in line with what we're seeing. And we're seeing more dramatic swings in temperature, so it's harder for crops. So you'll have 45 degrees one day and 5 the next. That's a problem for growers, but it doesn't mean we're not going to have any cold weather. So don't worry, Richard. We can definitely have a skating rink for a while if they want, for generations to come, before everything melts and we all drift off to sea. I'm going to get back to the phones. This is Melissa in Rochester next. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hi, Evan. I'm excited that we're talking about our essential, unique features in Rochester, and just want us to look to what's worked in the past and what's working for other regions. I was just in Cincinnati for a wedding, stayed in Center City. I could walk to the river where there was a yoga event for the public, looking over to Kentucky, marking the Mason-Dixon line. There was a major museum all about the Underground Railroad and the importance of freedom for everybody. There were adult games with music, chimes. There were fountains for children to play in. And just back a walk away from the river, we were at Fountain Square, which is their center city, recalling our Parcel 5. It was open space for public and privately hosted events for the public to enjoy, like a company could host something. They had a fountain celebrating the importance of water and the crossing of the river to freedom there in Ohio. They hosted several events, including one night was all Lou Rawls music for the public to enjoy, picnic tables everywhere. Another night was an event protesting gun violence. And yet another night, they televised the local football game. So it was free to the public to enjoy, even though it was just a short walk to the stadium to go on the river's edge to the football or the local baseball games. So things were very central. We could walk everywhere. And by the way, they have streetcars. So we used to have streetcars. And that worked well. It took people up to our playground at Charlotte. And so at that time, and I think it was the 20s, once you got off the streetcar, you could go on the boardwalk if you didn't want to get your feet in the sand. There were shops and restaurants, and people went there for Sunday picnics.
Melissa, let me just jump in here because you're giving us, first of all, a great sort of historical image, but then the question becomes, what's realistic now? And one thing that this process at least educated me on was the fact that we used to essentially have kind of the Coney Island of the North. I mean, it really was pretty remarkable. And when you get to the space, you can understand why. And Melissa is bringing up images of all kinds of beautiful, wonderful things. The question becomes, what is realistic going forward? Are we ever going to see that area that, I mean, is realistically, could it be that vibrant again? David, what do you think?
I think it's possible. I think it will be an incremental process. And I think the challenge is looking at sites like the site that the city is now looking to develop as one piece of a much larger puzzle. And I think sometimes we get hung up on wanting to see everything in that site and then being disappointed when it doesn't reflect our broader hopes and dreams for that place. So I do think it's possible, but I think we need to expect it to happen gradually and piecemeal.
Yeah, and so I think, Council Member Clifford, when we think about this, what is it, 2.8 acres, that there's a lot of different things that could happen there. And as David says, whatever our crammed, filled, you know, mental box of ideas is, it's not all going to be in the same place. But if it's successful, we'll see, I think, other development come up along. And it's probably worth going back a little and having you remind listeners that there was a pretty contentious debate about high-rise, about that idea of hotel or condominiums. Can you remind us what we looked at down there, sort of why it went off the rails, and if there was demand for hotel usage there, condominiums? What do you think?
So the previous project, you know, I do think that the major problem that people had with it was that it was a 10-story building, and it was a combination of residential, and then there was a hotel component as well. And, you know, pretty high-end housing, which, you know, some people had some concerns about whether or not there really was a market for that. And I think a very important thing was it was before the marina project was completed, and the marina was really just getting underway. And so it's a whole new ball game now. I think we really have to remind people that if you have not been down to see that marina, you should. It's a whole different place. They have done a wonderful job. They have brought more people there. There are new businesses opening at the port. It's really an exciting place. So I think similarly, if we have another development that fits in on this parcel, according to this plan, again, we will just see it grow and grow. I think David's right. It's going to be incremental. But, you know, that's the way it should be happening, right? Is maybe we can take a little bit of time and see how things go and, you know, see what really takes on excitement there. I will say that the boating community, which I think people had talked about, but, you know, if people aren't boaters, they don't really realize that there is a boating community and they do go around the Great Lakes and stop and visit and want to, you know, participate in the local nightlife or whatever activity is down there. So, you know, we've brought in people just based on the marina. So, you know, it's been a great experience so far. So hopefully we'll continue that.
I don't want to ask all three guests in studio to sort of speak for the entire community, because again, there's a lot of diverse views in the community. And I should mention, we reached out to the Charlotte Community Association. I'll read a statement from them in a second because they couldn't join us today. But do you all get the sense that a high rise in that spot is sort of off the table because of what happened, or could we see that again?
Well, in the charrette, I was surprised that some people were willing to talk about the high rise, and they were willing to accept something that was a higher high-rise building, but not in that location. So they were more willing to have the high-rises be closer to south of there as a way that wouldn't disrupt the view sheds. And so they really basically kind of relocated the high-rise development to another part of Charlotte. Which is a possibility, but I don't know that the city controls that land. So that's the issue.
Okay. Councilmember Clifford?
Right. I think there is very little support for a high-rise project. I certainly hope that we get other submissions that don't include something that big. Again, we can't really control what comes in. What we can control is what we choose. And, you know, obviously it's something that has to be a successful project for the developer as well as the community. So, you know, we'll see.
Okay. David Riley?
Yeah, I think you would find pretty widespread resistance to something that is perceived as too tall. I think you might find more of a mix of opinion about how dense the site is, how densely developed it is. And that doesn't need to necessarily mean 10 stories. But I think there are some mixed views there. And I think that gets to what Councilwoman Clifford mentioned in terms of what will work for a developer to actually be able, you know, if this is going to be a private project, something that will actually pencil out and how dense it has to be to do that.
Okay.
One of the things that I wanted to say about the charrette process is that it really educated our residents and our community members about, you know, what some of the challenges are. And I think, unfortunately, the way that the first project developed, there wasn't an opportunity for people to really understand, you know, what goes into a project like this or really what goes on to in urban development. So it was a great opportunity from all perspectives to learn more about urban design and what works. And why do you build closer to the sidewalk? And people were really receptive to that. So I think the hardening of positions that came in maybe the last time around, I don't see that happening again this time. I think there is a much greater understanding of really the benefits and some of the drawbacks of a variety of different design and different economic development proposals.
Well, there is on November 8th, so coming up next month, November 8th, 3:30 p.m. at City Hall Council Chambers, a public meeting. City staff are going to be available to provide clarification on the requirements for the RFP, respond to questions. Proposals are due by the end of January. So this public meeting may help. What else can we expect, Molly, to make sure that this is transparent and that the community does feel involved?
Well, one thing I know for sure is that the Charlotte Community Association is very committed to staying active and staying really abreast of what's going on and letting people know what's going on. And I believe that the city staff wants to have an open and transparent process. You know, during the RFP process itself, that's kind of a closed process only because, you know, other developers are proposing things and they don't want the details of their proposals to get out and, you know, there's some confidential stuff there. But once the proposal is chosen, then there will be, I hope, plenty of opportunity for the community to respond.
Let me read the statement that we got from the Charlotte Community Association. Quote, beginning with the charrette in 2017, a diverse team of Charlotte community members and stakeholders crafted a comprehensive vision plan for the Port of Rochester and surrounding area and is anxious to work with developers to bring the vision to life. The community is unified behind the vision and looks forward to working with developers and supporting future development opportunities that are profitable, realistic, and bring year-round environmentally friendly opportunities to the area. The Charlotte Community Association, Inc. is invested in this process and invite all our members to attend the upcoming RFP information meeting, end quote. And again, that's November 8th, 3:30 p.m. at City Hall. But, I want to say but, this is the wrong transition, but there's something that I think is important here. The city has already made clear, I think tax revenue is going to matter to the city. And that, to me, harkens us back to the Parcel 5 debate. It's a different piece of land, different ideas. But this notion of green space, the we are not a park, visionary square, I think is what they called it, didn't get as much traction, I think, as the people behind that proposal wanted because some of the power players involved doubted that they could really produce much revenue, much tax return. How important is that going to be for the city, Molly?
I mean, I do think that tax revenue is important, absolutely. And I think that the residents understand that that's a factor. So I think the days of we just want it to stay as it is an empty, really horrible parking lot are over. So, you know, huge step right there. And, you know, obviously there's plenty of green space around there and we don't want to interfere with it. But, you know, it's just it's a very different community. Charlotte is a different place. So I think tax revenue, absolutely important. But I believe that people don't think that it's the only thing, and that would be the mayor and the administration.
Okay, Maria, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, there's a great opportunity. One of the things we see is that parcels are looked at individually. And one of the things I think the Charette did and one of the things that we really advocate for is to look at things more holistically. So we took a zoomed out view and tried to look at all the resources and identified different things. And I think that municipalities have the opportunity to do something that private developers often cannot, which is to look at what really provides a community benefit that may not necessarily be totally profitable, but that can be supported by the community. So this idea of aquarium, again, is far-fetched, but is a possibility. Might not be a huge score as a profit-making endeavor, but could be the kind of thing that a municipality could support and help launch. You know, obviously keeping in mind that a lot of good things have to be set in place and grow with time. We have this perception that everything has to happen in a really short time frame, and that's not really the basis for good design or good community building.
David Riley, when I think about the kinds of debate we heard at Parcel 5, and I think about the kind of debate that we'll probably see continuing at the port and in Shalott until something is chosen, it seems that there is a little bit of dissonance, and I'm curious to know what you make of this, the debate over what really does generate tax revenue. Now, obviously, a big development, a big retail outlet, et cetera, that's bustling, et cetera, another Eastview Mall, if you could replicate it and make it successful, that kind of thing creates tax revenue. It's harder, I think, for some folks, whether you're a community member or in leadership, to see that more green space or more less obvious things are going to lead to more of a return on your investment because it probably takes a little bit more time. The way you build a community might require good green space, good parkland, the kind of amenities that don't just look like Myrtle Beach and the same plastic neon strip over and over and over. But that takes time. And how do you find a balance between saying to leadership, I know you want that return, and I know you want that big development or something that's like a cash machine right away, but I promise you over the next 5, 10, and 20 years, more people will live there, go there, work there, attend events there if you do it this way, and all of that is going to be a bigger return on your investment. Is there an argument to be made for that?
Yeah, certainly, and I think there's good evidence that there are economic benefits to green space as well as all the other benefits of green space for health, for climate, for a variety of things. As you said, the challenge is that there's not as direct a relationship to show between, you know, a tax bill and the city's general fund versus sort of secondary benefits that you get, again, from drawing people to a place, from drawing activity to a place, the sort of the secondary benefits you get from people then going to restaurants, going to more people going to Abbott's, more people able to sustain more restaurants down in that area, that these places do generate economic activity. There's a strong case to be made. I think it's just that it's not as immediate.
Okay. You want to add to that, Maria?
Yeah. And one of the things that was identified, as you said, there is a lot that currently exists, a lot of green space as a result of the park and all that. But one of the things that we're seeing in very vibrant places is this identifiable community space that acts as the center and the heart of the community. And that's one of the first things that was identified in Charlotte was the need of the community to want a center square, a town square kind of concept. And even though that may be smaller in scale than say, Parcel 5, having that identifiable town center really acts as a foundation for building a place. And so certainly that is almost something you see in every community that you currently look at as a vibrant example of a great city or a great space.
And I think we should mention part of the previous plan, and I think it remains part of the plan for development of the waterfront, is for a civic square.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think the city recognizes that to some extent, and that there is a thirst for that, and that is something that will be beneficial. I think the debate becomes, how big is it? How much of the space is it? Do we need more than one civic space? things like that.
I've got some more phone calls I want to take. So if you're on the line, Kathy, Bill, we'll get to your phone calls. I've got a lot of emails to try to squeeze in before the end of the hour, and I'm late for our only break. So let's get that only break now. We're trying to put a little vision down at the Port of Rochester and Shalott and the city reopening a process for RFP to try to come up with a long-term plan for putting the community first down there at the Port of Rochester. So let's take that break. Come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about the Trump administration's policy in regards to Afghanistan, in regards to nation building there, vis-a-vis trade in India. The Rochester chapter of the World Affairs Council is welcoming an expert in South Asian affairs who's going to have a conversation with us about what the Trump administration is doing in that part of the world and how it impacts us. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Doug on Twitter says the only solution at the Port of Rochester is a casino, Councilmember Clifford. It's going to have to be a casino.
We didn't get the fast ferry, but we did get the casino question.
No, not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's the first time anybody, 48 minutes into the hour, we finally had the word fast ferry.
I did it, David. I did it.
And you did it. I didn't do it.
I know.
I didn't take a call on the fast ferry. I didn't take an email. You brought it up. Are we going to see another ferry?
I don't think our casinos are doing very well. And I think like everyone else, if we had a small ferry, that might work.
And so, I'm sorry, Doug, but the fast ferry crashed into the casino and they sank into Lake Ontario. Let me get back to your emails. I'll read an email and then we'll go back to your phone calls. Derek wants to get back to the aquarium idea, which is on fire by email. Everybody's into the aquarium. He says the aquarium idea is interesting. I just visited Duluth, Minnesota, and there's the excellent aquarium of the Great Lakes. Three quarters of it shows our fish, wildlife, and the history of the Great Lakes. The other quarter is fish from around the world that you would see in any aquarium. Also superb exhibits about shipping and shipwrecks. A Rochester aquarium could do something similar and be the Eastern version with the same concept. He closes with this. He says, I'm also surprised there are not more tour boats going up the Genesee River from the port. It's the best hidden spot in Rochester. I don't know much about the tour boat industry there.
Oh, I don't either, but it is a beautiful stretch of the river, and to be down there is quite the ride.
And Bill writes to us and says, just a reminder, the Rochester Frostbite Association has been sailing in the river at Shalott for over 60 years from November through April. Would love to see more people using the area in the winter. That's from Bill. That's part of the goal here, right?
Amen.
That is part of the goal. Thank you, Bill, for that. I'm going to get back to your phone calls now, and let's do Kathy and Brighton first. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think as probably all of you realize, this is a big arts area. I myself belong to three art clubs. And so what I'm thinking is that the port would be an excellent area for art studios or workshops that invite people to come and paint outdoors, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
Maria?
Yeah, absolutely. Arts is one of the best ways to bring resources to a community, and it's also a wonderful way to bring people together. So arts is a huge win, and it's certainly something that we as a community should identify as a primary focus.
And I'm going to get in trouble as a council person because I'm blanking on the name of the group that has just taken over the old Lakeside Presbyterian Church on Stetson Street, which is now a performance space for a number of bands and choirs, and they've had some play productions there as well. So we're listening, Kathy.
All right. Jim on Twitter says, when are we going to realize that developers are just fronts for construction companies and they only make money when they build? Their interests are only in making money and then selling the project when finished. Look at the vacancies at College Town and Costco, which is an eyesore. Tough words from Jim. Councilmember Clifford, too strong? Do you agree with any of that?
I think that's too strong. I think all development is local, quite honestly. And if you look at the lack of vacancy downtown, I think you will see that people are very willing to live in interesting places. And certainly living that close to the lake and river, I think, will be very popular for a number of potential residents.
Okay. David, how do you feel about his take on developers?
I mean, I think it's a little strong, but I don't think... I don't think it's incorrect to say that developers are driven by profit. I mean, that's sort of what developers do. I think the sense that all developments are sort of destined for failure once the developer is done with it is more questionable. And I think, you know, it's more about whether the project is well planned and in a good location that has a lot of potential. I think that has a lot to do with the equation. I can see Maria
jumping. Go ahead, yeah. Maria.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of the things this brings out is, you know, understanding the motivation of the developer. And certainly there are different motivations for developers. There are very community-minded developers that are interested in doing mm-hmm. more than just making money. And a lot of that has to do, again, with this concept of what's called patient capital, which is, again, taking a longer window to seeing the return on investment. But I think the point is that it's important to look at the developer's motivation and the fact that there is an opportunity to seek out a developer that is community-minded.
All right. And I could think of some offhand. I mean, I'll just say that reputationally, people like Brett Garwood and what they do have a very strong reputation for. I mean, everybody, as David said, everybody wants to be in business. Everybody wants to make money. But Molly, just briefly, is it fair to say that there are people that might come to mind that
aren't
just about making
very money? Fair. I think Brett and Home Leasing is a great example with the Eastman Dental Dispensary and projects like those, the Cornerstone Group and Josanna. We've had some great partners.
And I don't mean to single just one person, et cetera, because I'm sure there are others. But all right, so back to your phone calls. Rich in Greece, we got to keep it tight now. We're running out of time. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, as an engineer, whenever I'm faced with an opportunity, I always ask, what problem is this project intended to solve? So I have them define the problem. Then I define how is this going to be paid for, who's actually paying, and what are the intended and unintended consequences of anything. So, for example, if you create something in some place, in one place, it's going to take away people from another area, like Giuliani in New York. He stopped crime in Manhattan, but also all the criminals moved out to Queens, Bronx, and to Brooklyn, and he claimed victory. I got rid of the crime in Manhattan. Well, yeah, you pushed them out into the other boroughs. So I just leave that there. You know, it's a really good opportunity. You know, I love to go places, but what is it intended to solve?
It's a great framing, Rich. I think that's really wise. And who wants to take a stab at that? If you're going to define the answer to Rich's question, what problem are we going to solve?
Well, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for a neighborhood of Rochester that is undervalued and underutilized by residents, by visitors, and where we could strengthen our local economy through more people who live there, who spend their money there. You know, one of the unfortunate things about Charlotte now is we have a preponderance of tattoo parlors and five and dime stores. And so to be able to turn that around to provide better services for the people who live there and visit there, I think is great.
And maybe, David, part of the answer to what problem are we solving is one of the most underutilized spaces that has potential high return on an investment. Waterfront does pretty well in a lot of different communities, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and as Maria's rattled off a couple of examples here, but yeah, we can look at other smaller and mid-sized cities that have done a tremendous amount with waterfronts, not just as a commercial opportunity, but as a community opportunity and as gathering spaces and people, the places that bring people together.
Yeah, the placemaking potential is amazing. The fact that we might be able to use Charlotte as an example of what would be an ideal walkable, bikeable place is tremendous, because I think people don't understand the impact and value of that until they experience those spaces.
Hmm. Let me read an email that was passed along to me by producer Megan Mack from Sue Rothel, who is with CCA,
CCS.
Charlotte Community Association. Here's what Sue's take on this is. She says, the intent is to sell the property to a private developer that will return it to the tax rolls and increase the tax base. But it also specifically talks about the need to understand the community's vision and perspective. That is a huge improvement from last time. We've known all along that the property would be developed for revenue of some kind. I don't remember that many residents vehemently disagreeing with the sale of land so much as the fact that we vehemently disagreed with the gross scale of the Edgewater plan, plus their funding sources and lack of secure funding. The CCA has worked aggressively all spring and summer to develop a vision plan that would be timely and something to point developers to when the time came. That the city included the links to our Charette report and vision plan in the RFP and highly encourages developers to work with the community is a huge improvement over the process that was rolled out last time. That's from Sue.
Molly, agreed.
Thoughts there?
Yeah. No, she's 100% right. And, you know, kudos to the community association, to the design center and the city for really working together and I think being honest partners.
David, are you optimistic that whatever is eventually chosen here is going to be something that the community will get behind?
As we've noted earlier, you're never going to get everybody behind it.
But sure.
I think the community has a clear idea of what it would like to see there. Thanks to these processes and working through these exercises, including the charrette. And I think the city pointing to this work will make a smart developer look for as many opportunities as they can to incorporate what the community has described here into their work.
20 seconds. Do you agree there?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's easy. And I think about what Bob Duffy said, former mayor and now with the chamber. I had a good-natured joust with Bob when he said, you know, this community too often trips itself up. It trains its guns on itself when it's got a project that could be really successful. And my only point to Bob, and I think he took the point well, which was you can't just blindly support something if tax money's going into it or if it's an important spot. You want to get it right. But his point is, once a decision's made, are you going to support it? I think that's a big question this time around, and we will see. So you got a public meeting coming up November 8th, 3:30 p.m. at City Hall. This port development and this new RFP, which is due by the end of January. Thanks to Councilmember Clifford. Always nice to see you. Thank you
thanks
very much.
Thanks so much, Evan.
And our thanks to, from the Community Design Center, Maria Frigiuelli. Always nice to see you. Thank you. And David Riley from, among other things, CGR. Nice to see you, David.
Same here.
All right. More connections coming up.